Tonight I want to talk about jhanas 5, 6, 7, and 8. The formless jhanas, or as they're called in the suttas, the immaterial states. The suttas refer to four jhanas and four immaterial states, but at times someone will go through the four jhanas followed immediately by the four immaterial states, so the tradition developed fairly soon to call them the eight jhanas. The first four jhanas are referred to as the material jhanas, or the fine material jhanas, the rupa jhanas. It's not because they are made of anything material, but because, well, one, rupa means body, and you can still sense your body. You're to drench, steep, saturate, and suffuse your body with piti and sukha. Also, because in the material world, we have experiences of rapture, of happiness, of contentment, and of quiet stillness. So they're not so different. There's a simile in the Visuddhimagga that talks about the four jhanas. You're lost in the desert and you don't have any water, and it's a very precarious position. And you're wandering around and you come over a little rise, and in the distance you see what might be palm trees. Or it might be a mirage, but you head towards it. And as you get closer, it's definitely palm trees. It's not a mirage. You begin to get excited. It might be an oasis. And you get closer still, and you encounter people that have bundles of wet clothing. They have wet hair. It's an oasis. You get really excited, first jhana. You come to the oasis. It's beautiful, big pool of water. Oh, you are so happy, second jhana. You drink the water, you go for a swim, you get cleaned up, you get out, you are content, satisfied, third jhana. And then you lie down in the shade of a tree and have a rest, fourth jhana. This is very much like what it is to move through these four jhanas. Excitement, and then happiness, contentment, and quiet stillness. But the four higher jhanas, the immaterial states, the formless jhanas, are quite unlike anything we've experienced in the material world. I'll read you the description. Here, by passing entirely beyond bodily sensations, by the disappearance of all sense of resistance, and by non-attraction to the perception of diversity, seeing that space is infinite, one reaches and remains in the realm of infinite space. So the fifth jhana has a name, the realm of infinite space. Actually, at the time of the Buddha, they didn't have the concept of zero. I doubt they had the concept of infinity. So maybe a better translation would be the realm of limitless space or boundless space. Probably the best way to explain what this all means is to just give you the instructions for getting to the fifth jhana. In the fourth jhana, the sense of sinking down is so pronounced that you may find that your body actually sort of droops over, slumps. If you want to move to the fifth jhana, you might want to straighten yourself up. Oh, of course, if you are peeking and you see somebody slumped over, you should think, oh, how nice, they're in the fourth jhana, rather than, oh, they've fallen asleep, right? But if you're slumped over in the fourth, get your energy back up. And then it says, by passing beyond all bodily sensations. So that means that in the higher jhanas, there's no sense of body. If they're immaterial, non-body, that makes sense. By the disappearance of all sense of resistance and by non-attraction to the perception of diversity, seeing that space is infinite, one reaches and remains in the realm of infinite space. So, get your energy up, and then you need to find something you can expand without limit. What Ayakema told me was to get in touch with the boundaries of my being and then expand them to fill the room. And once I got that done, expand them to fill the building. And then the retreat center, and then the area, and then further out to the horizon, and just keep going. Just keep imagining expanding the boundaries of my being further, further away. When you reach the horizon, just focus on the expansion. At first, there's the room and the building and the retreat center, etc. But once you hit the horizon, don't go past the moon and Mars and Jupiter and all this. Just expand, okay? Stay focused on the sense of outward expansion. If you can do this really well, a vast, empty space will open before you. Don't look for the space. If you're looking for the space, you're not focused on the outward expansion. Okay? Just like the pleasant sensation you put your attention on after you've been at access concentration isn't the first jhana, you've got to wait for the piti and sukha to arise. The expansion is not the fifth jhana. It's when the space opens up in front of you. Now, it turns out it doesn't matter what you expand. You can expand the boundaries of your being, like Ayakema suggested, or anything else. I had one student who took an imaginary balloon and she blew it up bigger, 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 bigger until it popped and there was a space. She was also the one that took a flashlight, a torch, and followed the beam of light further, 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 further until the space appeared. I've had students talk about riding an elevator, going up in a rocket ship. It doesn't matter. Find something that you can expand out to infinity. You don't want to expand in all directions. That's too busy. Just pick two directions that you could move your arms in symmetrically, either off to the sides or in front of you or up and out. Up and out seems to be the most common way. Whatever it is you're expanding, just stay focused on the sense of outward expansion. And if you can do so, eventually, and if you have enough concentration, this vast empty space appears. Put your attention on the spaciousness. If you're a visual person, you'll probably see the space. Most people describe it either as off-white or light gray, or they describe it as dark, sort of like outer space, but with no stars, galaxies, or anything like that. It's just big and black. It doesn't matter. What matters is that you have this sense of space in front of you. If you're not particularly visual, you might not see the space. You'll just know that it's there somehow. I can't really tell you much about how that works because I'm very visual and I always see it. But in talking with students who aren't visual, they say, yeah, I know the space is there. So basically, the idea is to expand something and stay focused on the outward expansion until the space appears. Now, if the expansion gets stuck, then you're not passing beyond all sense of resistance. So if the expansion gets stuck, you're going to have to push through it or change direction or something to keep it expanding until it just expands all the way and the space appears. Put your attention on the spaciousness of the space. usually when you're first getting into it, the sense of space is in front of you. As you get more skilled, or as you bring more concentration, then the space might be below you, above you, behind you. There is a tiny sense of an observer, but you might not notice that at first. The space is like, wow! And so you're focused on the space, and it's only after getting there repeatedly, there's this tiny sense of observer with the space before them, or around them, or however it shows up. You want to learn to get there and to sustain it for, let's say, 10 minutes or so. Once you can do that, then you can move on to the sixth jhana. And by passing entirely beyond the realm of infinite space, seeing that consciousness is infinite, one reaches and remains in the realm of infinite consciousness. The instructions are getting a bit sparse. Okay. So the trick is, there's this infinite space. You cannot be conscious of an infinite space with a limited consciousness. Your consciousness has to be as big as the space it's conscious of. So the trick is to shift your attention from the space to your consciousness of the space. Become conscious of your consciousness. Become aware of your awareness of the space. When you do, it's sort of a turning back, and then you sort of become absorbed into the space, and you become this infinite consciousness. It's like your mind got really big. It's a subtle shift. When you're first learning it, it might not seem like there's much difference between 5 and 6, but as you get more skilled, the two do seem to be rather different. The major difference is that in 5, there's the space before you. The observer and the observed are separate, whereas in 6, the observer and the observed are the same thing. Your mind is observing how big your mind is. Most people, if they describe it visually, just describe it as dark. But there's a sense it's a really big, and it's your mind that's really big. People who come from spiritual traditions where the goal of the spiritual life is union with some higher self or Atman or Brahma, if they stumble into the sixth jhana, they think they've done it. I mean, what else could it be? My consciousness is now as big as the whole universe. Well, no. You're just having an experience that you perceive that your consciousness is as big as the whole universe. You didn't really merge with Atman. The Buddha definitely wasn't talking about any Atman or anything to merge with. You're just having an experience that feels like that. Sometimes when the sixth jhana is very strong, it might feel like there are other consciousnesses within that infinite consciousness. Little consciousnesses over here, little consciousnesses over there. It's not like you can read the minds of the other people in the room. It just sort of feels like there's other consciousnesses there. This doesn't happen unless you've got a really deep, strong sixth jhana. I've had it happen to me, I don't know, 5 or 6 times, and I've been practicing the sixth jhana since 1991. So it's only when I get it really, really strong do I get that sense. And it has nothing to do with it. It's just like, oh, cool. Okay, so once again, you want to be able to maintain this state for 10 minutes at least, maybe longer. And then you can try moving on to the seventh jhana. By passing entirely beyond the realm of infinite consciousness, seeing that there is no thing, one reaches and remains in the realm of no thingness, nothingness. Okay, so the trick is to find some sense of nothing. What you've got is this limitless consciousness. What is the content of that consciousness? Well, it turns out the sense of space is long gone. When you look, the consciousness is conscious of nothing. It's not anything it's conscious of. It's conscious of nothing. Put your attention on the nothing. At first, it might be kind of a small nothing. But as you stay with it, you realize there's nothing over here and there's nothing over there. And it gets to be a big nothing. It's sort of like you go down into the basement and you hit the light switch and it doesn't work. And you're trying to see what's in the basement. Well, there's nothing right in front of you. And there's nothing over there. Why, there's nothing down here at all. This is very much what it's like as the seventh jhana comes on. A sense of nothing that just, well, when you look at the edges, there's still nothing. It doesn't get as big as the infinite space or the infinite consciousness. It's just that there's nothing. If you're visual, it can appear in one of two ways. One way is that it's just dark, like in the basement with nothing in it. It's black, deep purple, dark blue, something like that. The other way that it can appear, you remember the old televisions when you turned them to where there wasn't a channel and you got the black and white static? At least I assume you got that in Finland. Okay, imagine black and black static. Right? It's just sort of things moving. There's nothing there, but there's this sense of movement. Sometimes people report the seventh jhana showing up like that. Doesn't matter which one it is, or even if it shows up some other way where you know there's nothing. Now, this no-thingness is not the same as the emptiness that gets talked about in the Mahayana tradition. This is nothing. It's like in this room there are a lot of things. There are cushions and benches and mats and candle and clock and water and people, chairs. Suppose tonight while you're asleep somebody comes and takes everything out and you come in the morning and you open the door and there's nothing there. Okay, this is the type of nothing that it is in the seventh jhana. It's like you take the top off the cookie jar and there's nothing there. All right? It's just nothing. People sometimes stumble into this state by accident. In fact, they can stumble into any of the jhanas by accident. But this one, I've had several people come to me and say they were like on the 3-month course at IMS in Barre, Massachusetts, and they were just meditating away, doing their Vipassana practice, and suddenly they fell into the void. There was nothing, and it freaks them out. Because if you're going to go straight to the seventh jhana, you're going to be pretty concentrated, and it's going to be a pretty strong experience of no-thingness. So people fall into the void and then they go running to the teacher and they're all freaked out. And the teacher gets them calmed down, says go take a shower or get something to eat. Maybe don't meditate for a few days. So they come on retreat with me and they say, can I tell you about something that happened? And I say, yeah. And they describe it and I go, well, sounds like the seventh jhana, this realm of no-thingness. I don't know, it was really scary. Don't worry about it. It's fine. So they go, they learn the first 6 jhanas, and then they come to me and I say, okay, here's the instructions for the 7th jhana. I don't know if I want to go back there. It's okay, it'll be fine, you know, go try it out. So they go and they come back for the next interview. Yeah, that's right, that's what it was. It was exactly the same, only this time it wasn't scary. The only reason it was frightening was because they didn't know what was happening. There's nothing to be afraid of. It's my favorite jhana. It's a great place to hang out. There's nothing to disturb you. And it gives you a really deep, concentrated mind. So, you want to hang out there again for, well, you want to get quite good at the seventh jhana. The eighth jhana is quite difficult to find unless you've got a good seventh jhana. If your seventh jhana is quite good, quite stable, then the eighth jhana is fairly easy to find. And by passing entirely beyond the realm of no-thingness, one reaches and remains in the realm of neither perception nor non-perception. Okay. So, perception is a translation of the Pali word sanya. Sanya usually means the ability to identify things, to name them. So you look up here and you know this is a candle, and this is a light, and this is a person, and that's flowers. For example, let's see. Can you see Alexander Dumas? Can you see a person? Can you see a person here? Yeah? There's no person there. It's just black and white shapes. The person is in your mind, right? You're the one seeing these black and white shapes, which is all that's there. It's just pixels, right? And you put it together and make it a person. That's perception. We do this with everything. It's easiest to see it with a painting. So when you're walking around here, take a look at one of the paintings and look carefully. It's just colored shapes. And it's your mind that turns it into a person or a moose or whatever it is. The eye only sees colored shapes. The ear only hears sounds. It's your mind turning it into truck or bird or music or whatever. That's perception, sanya. So, this eighth jhana is the realm of neither naming nor not naming, neither identifying nor not identifying. I don't guess that helps a lot. It's a very subtle state. The other thing is that sanya can also mean consciousness. So then it would be a state of neither consciousness nor unconsciousness. That probably doesn't help a lot either. Okay, let's just say it's a really subtle state. But if you get a good nothing, a big nothing, nice, solid, stable nothing, let the nothing collapse and come to rest in front of your face and see if your mind will go into a state that has no characteristics by which you can describe it, but you can stay in this state that has no characteristics by which you can describe it. If so, then you've probably found the eighth jhana. If you can describe where you are, then that's perception. So it wouldn't be the eighth jhana. And if you have no clue what's going on, then maybe it's not the eighth jhana. But here you know that your mind is stable. It's just you can't talk about where it is. That's really what the eighth jhana is about. All of these jhanas are considerably more fragile than the first four, meaning that you need more concentration to get to them and more concentration to stay in them. But the eighth is far more fragile than any of the others, far more fragile than the seventh. In any jhana, you could have the object of attention and your one-pointedness. In the third jhana, you've got your contentment and your one-pointedness on the contentment. If you start getting distracted, the contentment starts to fade, but if you get back in time, it'll come back up. It's not like the moment you get distracted, the contentment disappears. Right? So you start to lose it, and you can get back to it. Even at the seventh jhana, there's the nothing, and your one-pointed attention on the nothing, and you might start to lose it, and get back before it completely disappears. But the eighth is far more fragile. You might have time for one simple sentence that doesn't contain the words I, me, or mine. Right? It disappears really quickly. I couldn't tell you the number of times I've been in the eighth jhana, yeah, got it, know that I'm there, and then suddenly find myself in the middle of some paragraph of distraction. There is no hint of the eighth jhana left. It just is completely gone, nothing to come back to. So I have to go back to the seventh jhana or sometimes back to the fifth and work my way back up there again. All of the other jhanas, after I had learned them fairly well, it wasn't long before I felt I could stay in them as long as I wanted. 10 minutes, 20 minutes, half an hour. It was a year before I could stay in the eighth jhana for half an hour, and only after I had practiced it on one 1 month retreat, and then practiced it during the ensuing year, and then been on another 1 month retreat for like, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, and then finally, one time, I got into the eighth jhana, and it was so stable, it wasn't going to go away. But it's a subtle state. These higher jhanas give you a mind that is even more concentrated, clearer, sharper, brighter, more malleable, more wieldy, more given to imperturbability, which once again you can direct and incline to knowing and seeing. In other words, they too are intended to enhance your insight practice. They just give you a deeper level of concentration. The jhanas are in order by increasing subtlety of object. Right? They get more and more subtle as the number goes up. If you're able to stay focused on something quite subtle, it enhances your concentration. And so by moving through them, you can generate a very deeply concentrated mind. There is a state that is sometimes called the ninth jhana. It's never mentioned like that in the suttas, but some of the later material refers to it. It is mentioned in the suttas, and there it's called the cessation of feeling and perception, the cessation of vedana sanya. Cessation, you might be familiar with that word, nirodha. Okay, so nirodha, vedana sanya, something like that. It's a state of suspended animation, really. You might have heard about the yogis in India. They dig a pit, they put them in a coffin, they put them in the pit, they're there for a week, they dig them up, they're fine. This is somebody who's put themselves into nirodha, suspended animation. Not too much more I can tell you about it, other than there's a documentary on the Kumbh Mela Festival in India. It's a festival that happens every 12 years. There was one this year. The documentary is on the one that happened in 2001. It's rather a large gathering, I think like 20 million people or something. Not your average backyard picnic. The documentary is called Shortcut to Nirvana. And it's quite good. It's a very interesting documentary. Definitely recommend watching it if you're interested in, yeah, some of the strange things that go on the spiritual path. It's got the Dalai Lama. It's got all sorts of people in it. Some of which is quite inspiring and some of which is a real head-scratcher. But one of the scenes, they dig a big pit and they put a ladder in it, and this Japanese woman climbs down into the pit, and then they pull the ladder out and they put some roofing tin over the pit and cover it with dirt. End of scene. And they go show all sorts of other things. But 3 days later, they come back, they sweep away the dirt, they remove the roofing tin, they put the ladder back down, and she climbs out all happy. She must have been in the state of nirodha. I was in Thailand once for Thai New Year's. Thai New Year's is at the end of the hot season and the beginning of the rainy season. It's in the spring, in April. And it's when the Thais do their spring cleaning. And one of the things they would do would be to wash the Buddha statues. Any Buddhist Thai home would have a shrine and they would wash the Buddha statues at this time. Well, the tradition developed, you would take some of the water that you had used for washing the Buddha statue, and you would sprinkle it on the hands of your elders to salute their Buddha nature. Well, in modern times, the sprinkling has, shall we say, gotten a bit out of hand. Everybody in the country is throwing buckets of water on everybody else in the country. It's a highly participatory festival. You step out of the door of your guest house room and you're greeted with a bucket of water. Okay, it's 35 or 40 degrees, so it's not really a problem. But it's the world's biggest water fight. And it goes on for 3 days. It's quite a scene of chaos. And so I was there, and on the first morning I went down to the main square in Chiang Mai, which is really the center of where this all happens. And they had set up spigots along the main street. And the Thais would see me coming with my white face and say, one baht, meaning if I put in a coin, the water would come out. And they had barrels they were collecting the water in, and of course, since I put the coin in, I could fill up my bucket. You got to have a bucket, you know, to protect yourself, right? And so there were other things going on, and over in the main square, off to one side, there was a little pavilion that had been set up. And in that pavilion, there was a monk. He was seated in full lotus. His eyes were open and downcast and not blinking. He was obviously meditating, which was kind of impressive, given there was all this chaos going on around him. I mean, you know, you're sitting in here and you get upset when somebody sort of rustles their clothing or something. This guy had parades going by and buses, you know, horns honking, and you know, he's just sitting there unmoving. It was actually quite inspiring. He was there all day. He was there when the big parade came by in the afternoon. He was there that night when they had the first round of the beauty pageant about 30 meters away. He was there the next day. He was there all day long. He was there the third morning when I went down there. He looked a little tired. Serenely tired. He was the most serene person I think I've ever seen. He was there that afternoon when the biggest parade of all came by. He was there that night when they had the finals of the beauty pageant. He was gone the next day. He had to be in the state of Nirodha. I mean, just wasn't picking up any of this. No sensory input to disturb him. It was quite inspiring. The only other thing I can tell you about this state, I sat a retreat with the Venerable Pao Ok, who's a jhana master from southern Burma. And he teaches the Visuddhimagga jhanas, the jhanas described in the commentaries that were written more than 800 years after the Buddha's death. These are states of complete absorption. When you're in the first jhana, there's no sense of your body, there's no sounds, and there's no passage of time. Now, as I mentioned, he wants you to get the circle of light, the nimitta. And so I had 2.5 months at the forest refuge before he showed up to start trying to get concentrated. And then I had 4 months when he was there. And eventually I could get the actual real nimitta, this circle of light. And I just hang out with the circle of light, and that was going on for several weeks, and you know, nothing more was happening. And then one day, my usual thing was to go for a walk after lunch. This was summertime, it was quite warm, and I would come back, and I wouldn't drink much water because I wanted to be able to meditate for like, you know, 3 hours. So I didn't want to have to get up to go to the toilet. And I was lying down to meditate. It was easier to lie down if you're going to meditate for 3 hours, I found. Sometimes, you know, it's hot, I just eaten, you know, I get a little sleepy, a little drifty, right? And then one afternoon I come back from being kind of sleepy, and I was doing the counting practice. And I was counting for an hour before I stopped. I got a little drifty, but I found that sometimes I could keep counting while I was a little sleepy, right? And I come back and I'm still counting, and the nimitta is very, very vivid, the most vivid I'd ever seen. It was like, I'm stopping counting, putting my attention on that. And as soon as I did, it was 45 minutes later, approximately. I'm not sure exactly. That's my best guess. But I was gone. There was an airplane that came by, and it was like, meh, and that was it. Now, normally when an airplane flies over, you hear it for longer than a second or two. And that was early on. And then, you know, there was nothing. There was no sense of the body. No passage of time. When I came out of it, it was like, yeah, I was really concentrated. I was very definitely concentrated. But I was gone. I was completely absorbed. I was in what I would call the state of the cessation of feeling and perception. There was no vedana. There was no pleasant or unpleasant or neutral. There was no sensory input. And there certainly was no perception, because there was nothing to perceive. I was just gone, except for that second or second and a half where the airplane went by. So it would seem to be that the jhanas described in the commentaries start at the cessation of feeling and perception and build from there. I don't know about the other jhanas, what the differences were or anything else. I only got to that first jhana one time. But I had read a paper earlier that suggested that was the case. And yeah, my own experience was that, yeah, there it is possible to get completely absorbed so that, yeah, no passage of time. I mean, you're gone and then you're back. Since I only did it once, I didn't get a chance to experiment to see if it made my insight practice that much better. Maybe it does. Be a good thing to do if you have to go to the dentist, I guess. But in order to learn it, you're going to need about 6 months or a year on retreat, which probably isn't really practical for most of the people in this room. So maybe better to learn the jhanas that are closer to what the Buddha was doing. I mean, if they were good enough for him, maybe they're good enough for you. And as I say, what I'm teaching you here, if you stay long enough in access concentration, you can take pretty deep. So these are the higher jhanas.